Good morning. Welcome to Focus, our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us, and we're very happy to have back on the program once again the man that we like to call our chef in residence. His name is Doyle Moore, and for a very long time, oh, longer than anybody can even remember, back into the dim and distant past, we started doing the show, and he stopped by once a month, and we talk about food, and we always have a good time. We tell stories, and we swap recipes, and shows have kind of a loose theme that we dance around a little bit. But we always start out with a particular kind of idea, or maybe it's sometimes it's a kind of a question. So he was thinking he would like to have pie. He would like to make pie. But, you know, depending on what kind of pie you're looking at, you may not really be able to get at this time of year what you would like. There's no farmer's market going down now, so you're not going to get fresh fruit for a pie if that's what you want. And so he started thinking, well, okay, so what do you do if you have to work with what you've got? Could you go to your pantry and find some stuff there that you could use to make a pie? And people have been doing that for a long time, sometimes out of just sheer necessity, that's what they did. So he's found some interesting recipes, and we can talk. And basically, I guess we could talk about pie. I mean, and we'd be happy to have any pie conversation. But particularly if you have an interesting, unusual recipe for pie, that's one of those things that says, well, I can look at what I've got, and I can make something out of that, and it'll be good. And we'll have some examples. And maybe you'd like to call in and say hello or share a recipe or what have you. You can do that. 333-9455. That's the Champaign-Urbana number. Toll free, 800-222-9455. And you may also send us an email if you would like, will-talk@illinois.edu. Welcome back. Glad to have you here. So you were thinking about pie, huh?
Well, I wanted to do something. And lo and behold, Southern Living magazine came, and right on the front cover was this tangerine chess pie. I said, tangerine chess pie? And because I've always looked at a chess pie as kind of a fake pecan pie without any pecans, which it is indeed. And I realized that every time I go to Nashville, I always end up getting chess pie. So I sort of resented the fact that why is it always there and why isn't it right here? And so I decided to take care of that. And within the hour, I was making the tangerine chess pie, which turned out to be an absolute winner. I was only able to give one piece away. That is to say, I ate the rest because it was so good, and I was pleased with it. So I began to look at some other recipes for pies of that sort. Now I've known a lot, and we've even talked on this show about some of these recipes that I brought back again, which are kind of they seem peculiar, but they aren't peculiar because what they are the best word is make do. Mm-hmm. It's just going to be a make do pie, which means I've got some sugar and I've got some butter and I've got some eggs. What else do you need? Well, for a chess pie, nothing except some liquid. And some chess pies use cream, and some chess pies use, in this case, a third of a cup of citrus. I even went out and got a tangerine. Here I'm grumping about the fact that things aren't available. Of course, this is tangerine season yet. And so I got some fresh tangerines and made this pie. And then I got to looking at others, and my mother didn't contribute too much to this. Custard pie was about as far as she did for pies that would sort of fill in between apple and cherry. Cherry was my brother's favorite, and I got chocolate cream pie, and I don't know what Daddy got. He got – maybe he just ate whatever was
served.
But I remember she always made an issue of making a cherry pie for my brother, which I dearly wanted to have. And I could have it, but I could never have a pie for me. And so the pie for me was a chocolate cream pie, which I don't sneer at too much, but I – But you know that sibling rivalry. I still love cherry pie, and every time I eat a piece of cherry pie, there is nothing but guilt. But I love it anyway. And we've known about pies made with vinegar. A lot of these recipes come from when the Midwest was settled, and you had to sort of supply yourself for a whole year of food before you could go into town and buy some more necessities. Mm-hmm. And there would be, 200 pounds of flour. So you always had flour. You more than likely had chickens and eggs. You more than likely had a cow. You had butter. So you had fat and butter and flour and such things. But lemons you didn't have. So they invented or produced the vinegar pie, which sounds like, oh, yuck, a vinegar pie. No, a vinegar pie tastes like a nice lemon pie that isn't lemon. It's sour in another way. And then buttermilk pies. And I didn't draw the line, but I remember there was a peanut butter pie. And let me think who it was. It was somebody who went across America once who wrote Henry Miller. Henry Miller, I think it might have been Henry Miller and John Cage were traveling across the country. And they were in Kansas.
Henry Miller and John Cage.
And they were lecturing. I don't know when this was. They were telling the story. But they were in Kansas. And they stopped in Kansas, and they got a peanut butter pie. And their response was, where else would you ever find a peanut butter pie? But pies that just take a few ingredients, something for the body and then something for the flavor, and the pie is done. And we chatted since we started the program early. We were chatting about the name Chess Pie, and I do like the story that it was explained. A person came to this house and they served pie, and he said, "Gee, this is really good. What is it?" And the housewife said, "Well, it's just pie." And when you think of it that way, that idea of make do rather than, oh, I'm going to make this. Whatever those attitudes were, they were very prevalent, and I remember some of those incidences, mm-hmm. But then I've been around long enough; I should remember them.
Well, I think I think people would resonate this because maybe it's the idea that people are looking for. Sometimes things that are more simple and more basic, or maybe they relate to harder times, because you can see that, there would, if you're living in a particular way and, there would be a time where you could pick berries. Okay. You could put that in
sure.
your pie, or you could go to a tree and you could pick apples.
Right.
Or you could have something like that, something
but not
that you
on
could,
the first of
but
February.
Not on the first of February. No. So then you start thinking, well, okay, what is the minimal that I could need? You need a crust, you need something to put in there, and you'd like it to be a little bit sweet, and maybe you'd like it to be a little bit tart. Well, okay, you can actually make that happen pretty simply,
with just those
kitchen
things. Basics. Yeah. That's why I like the idea of calling it make do, because you make it, and you made it out of what was there. I do have a quote from one author that I thought was very funny. It's the mock pecan pie, which uses grape nuts. I mean, grape nuts, mm-hmm. and brown sugar and oleo, and eggs and water and corn syrup. And so you see, it's just another chess pie with cooked grape nuts in it. But anyway, I like this quote down here. Jenny Pansy of Neck, Florida says, "We used to stir up something from nothing. Now they got to have too much before they begin." And it was just thinking of that particular idea. Like you weren't really daunted when you didn't have anything in the house, because you knew you could do something.
Yeah.
And so I'm sort of praising that cleverness of, what are we going to do? Well, let's do this. Okay.
Which is, I think, really the essence of cooking.
Yes.
I think if you're a cook, you should be able to, within some reasonable limits, you should be able to make something with what you got.
You should be able to have somebody
yes. sit down some ingredients and say, okay, there you go. Make something out of that. And I think that if you're a real cook, I think that I can. The thing, and also I guess the thing that, you know, when we sort of got into this, I started thinking about this topic. I guess the thing that I thought of was mock apple pie.
Oh, yes, the mock apple pie.
Which is kind of the same sort of idea because, of course, the mock apple pie does not have any apples
in
it.
No, it has crackers.
It has crackers.
But there are two mock apple pies, one with, and there's a soda cracker pie, and then the one that I learned first about the mock apple, and I didn't bring any of those recipes this time, was Ritz crackers.
With Ritz, yeah.
Ritz crackers, but it was Ritz crackers and vinegar and eggs and I still don't think there was milk in that one. There might have been another juice. But a mock apple pie, or I've heard it called pioneer pie. And but since it's kind of awkward because Ritz crackers didn't come into being until around 1930 or 28 or 27, something like that, I think. And but still, you were right in the middle of the Depression.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a lot of Kansas folks would have wanted to have made no Ritz crackers were a little bit too ritzy for those folks in that particular time. Yeah. It is something else.
But something like a saltine isn't that a has been around a lot?
Oh yeah, the saltine is around, and I've got a couple of Appalachian recipes that use the saltine.
Well, let me.
I know there's some of these secrets lying out there, and or if nothing else, at least a funny story about how you got through.
Our guest in this hour of focus is this man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. He's been with us for a long time, always on the first Wednesday. We pick some topic that we talk about, food related, and we kick it around and we invite calls and questions and stories and recipes. And it needn't be right on the theme, but this time around he said, well, first of all, he was interested in himself over at his house. He was interested in making pie. And then he went to his cupboard and was a little on the bare side. And he said, no, okay. So what, given that you have a few basic things, well, what do you do with that? And can you actually make something? 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Well, I'm interested in hearing about the tangerine chest.
Yes, I'll give that. Because I'll start with that.
I really do think, I wouldn't have thought about this, but as I think more about it, I think, well, the flavor of orange would work in there probably real nicely.
Since there is an equal pie made with vinegar, you know, and for the same reason, because you're too much of a lad. You don't remember. You don't remember when it was a great thrill to get an orange stuffed in the bottom of your stocking at Christmas, and that's the only time ever.
Mm-hmm.
So one day out of your year, you get an orange. And indeed, well, we just didn't, they just weren't shippable and they weren't available. And oranges had to come at another time when they could be rounded up. We just didn't do it. It just wasn't done. Rather than wishing you could have something, you just didn't. Well, tangerine chess pie. Here are the ingredients. 1.5 cups of sugar, 1 tablespoon of all-purpose flour, and 1 tablespoon of plain yellow cornmeal. If you make a chess pie, you got to put cornmeal in it. I think that is for a kind of a body.
Give it some kind of a thickening.
It's only a tablespoon of cornmeal. So you're going to have cornmeal. You're going to have flour. Mm. And 1/4 teaspoon of salt, 1/4 cup butter melted, and then 2 teaspoons of tangerine or orange zest. Then 1/3 of a cup of fresh tangerine or orange juice. and a tablespoon of lemon juice and 4 eggs. Now that's the whole bit. So and it's very easy. And while poking around, I made this and I thought, oh, this looks awful. This looks so curdly. And what's the matter? And I just said, I'm doing it right, so keep on doing it. And I mixed it up. I found in one of the recipes that said, it will look curdly, in parenthesis. So I thought, oh, good. I was glad to notice that was what was happening, and I'm glad to know that it didn't bother it. So what you do, now there was something that I did which I don't often do, and this recipe wanted to make the pie crust a little bit pre-cooked, but not exactly like a blind crust, you know, that's fully cooked. And so this one you baked for 8 minutes, and then at 450, and then reduce the oven to 350, and you cool. You bake it for 8 minutes is all, and then you let it cool. And while you're letting it cool, you make the interior, and then you reduce the oven to 350 and cook it the rest of the way at 350. So here's all you have to do. Whisk together the sugar and the next 8 ingredients, which were flour, cornmeal, salt, butter, and tangerine zest, and fruit juice. And then it asked for a tablespoon of lemon juice, and I used I had some key lime juice. So I said, well, we didn't have no lemons in the house. So I used key lime juice. And then 4 large eggs that you have whipped up a little bit. Mix. You just simply put all that together, and it's in one pot, and you throw it into this slightly pre-baked crust. And then since it's started to be baked, the last 20 minutes you may want to put some either brown paper or a foil around the edge for it not to brown or burn, and then you can't eat it for at least an hour and a half because it has to cool, and when it cools it will then set because it's a little bit jiggly when it comes out of the oven, of the real hot oven. So it then has to congeal a little bit because you're making that strange mixture of egg and sugar, and it when it cools, then it gets sort of gelatinous. Mm. But oh boy, was it ever good! And the zest of the tangerine and the tangerine juice was really, really kind of a nice little spike. And I thought, gee, this is a nifty recipe. And then in hunting, I found a very old book that had something for a lemon chess pie. And, of course, it was identical to this one. So whether this is new or old or whether it's just redone, this is from Southern Living, which my sister keeps sending me, and I enjoy it very much. Mm-hmm. But that was the way the tangerine chess pie got made.
All right. 333-9455, toll-free, 800-222-9455. Our guest is the man we like to call our chef-in-residence, Doyle Moore. This is our monthly cooking show. We've been doing it for a long time on the first Wednesday, and always invite questions, comments, and this time around, make do pies. 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455 and email will-talk@illinois.edu. Now, I have an email here which opens the door,
yes,
to a territory which we have explored before, a great mystery which I have found greatly frustrating and have always said, I'm going to see if I can figure out how to do that, and I really haven't. And I think you know what I mean. Pie crust. The person here is wondering, they say, I have never made pie crust from scratch. Oh. And do you have an easy, basic crust recipe?
Well,
you know, this is one of the things where you get 10 people in a room, you're going to get 15 different pie crust recipes.
Well, you're right about that. And there is a funny little variation. I don't have the amounts right here in my mind. Trying to think about Carolyn Gunter's recipe was a cup and a half of flour and one stick and two tablespoons of butter and then ice water. So I think with a cup with two cups of flour and a stick of butter. Now, yesterday I happened to witness on television someone who had taken the butter and, in fact, it was Barefoot Contessa. She cut the butter in small quarter inch cubes, and she put it in her Cuisinart and did just a couple of turns on it until and the butter was not emulsified into the flour. That's part of the trick, is to have little chunks of the butter so that the steam from the melting butter is what keeps it flaky. But then there's another little trick, and this is what Test Kitchen has recently done, making us all drunk.
Vodka.
Vodka.
Yes.
And the vodka does not dissolve certain things that water does. But it dissolves other things, and it doesn't do what water does. And so you don't just get a sloppy paste. And the vodka in – and I've tried to encourage my sisters to use vodka in their pie crusts. But I believe, as I say, two cups of flour, a stick and two tablespoons of butter, and probably – no more than a quarter of a cup of liquid, and whether that is water or vodka or not, and then I whirl that up until it just forms a ball. But now the main thing about it is you don't, and this is a hard thing for me to learn, because I don't remember my mother doing it. I remember mother making pie crust, and it would be made and rolled out all at once, and I do because well. She could have put it in the refrigerator, but she. I don't ever remember her putting the pie crust in the refrigerator. So she never did do this bit about letting it hydrate and soften and become more pliable. She just beat right into it and got it done.
Well, the thing, and it seemed to me like the thing that I had always heard before I just not all that actually it was not a lot long ago. I know that on NPR. They had some of the. I think it might have been on Fresh Air. Terry Gross had on some of the people from some of the Cooks Illustrated, the Test Kitchen people.
Oh yes,
and they talked about the vodka in the pie crust.
Oh, did they? Yes,
and said that very thing, that it functions because you have to have some liquid, but because of the chemistry of it, it works better than water.
Water,
because then essentially it evaporates. It's going to evaporate. Out of there when you bake it, so it's going to supply that moisture. But then, the baking process,
chemically, it doesn't make it mush,
right? And that's a way to get a light flaky
yes.
crust. I think though the other thing that I had always heard was that you need to make sure all of your ingredients are cold. Everything's supposed to be cold, and then they say don't overwork it
because you want it
to wait. That melting thing that your fat does when it sort of melts and makes layers and gets integrated with the flour, which is what makes it flaky, you don't want that to happen until it's in the oven.
Yes, yes.
You don't want that happen while it's on your countertop and you're messing around with it.
Don't heat it up with
yes.
your hands
yes.
and yes. beat it up and get too much gluten so that it can't rise.
Yeah.
So that is the bit about it. I mean, the images I get in my mind, I keep screaming when I see them. No, you don't just dump it out and then go push, pack it up, put it in some Saran wrap and put it in the oven, or in the ice box. But that's what it is.
Yeah. So because it's really in terms of the ingredients, it's there's not that much to it. It's really all in the. It seems to be. Really, it's in the technique. That's where it becomes that thing that you want it to be. And I think that some people have a touch, and I don't. But it's been a while since I really tried. I'm kind of afraid of it, actually. Because I've done so badly in the past. At one point I thought, I just don't.
Well, you've got all the right words, and you have the right attitude. Give it a try again.
See, my problem is, yes, I have all the right words, but going beyond the words to the deeds, now that, my friend, is something else entirely. Questions welcome here. Questions, comments, and tips, maybe cooking tips. We're talking here about pie. Maybe you have some thoughts about what makes a good pie one way or another. But also, as we started talking out, Doyle was thinking, well, he was really interested in exploring this territory of make-do pies. What's the simplest thing that you can do if you just have a few basic ingredients? How can you put that together so you can have something that you will be happy with and you'll have a good time with, and you'll be happy to give to folks who come by for a little something. That's what we're doing here. And maybe this would be a good point to take our usual break. We do at about this time. This is Focus, our morning talk show. We'll talk some more with our chef in residence, Doyle Moore, after this short break.
You depend on WILL for comprehensive news and thought-provoking commentary. And WILL depends on you for more than 40% of its operating budget. Beginning February 9th, we hope to encourage at least 400 listeners to support WILL with a pledge call. Or you could give online now at willpledge.org.
This is Focus. It's our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. We're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. We have 10 different topics every week. In the second hour, we'll talk with Michael Graybell. He's a journalist and a reporter with ProPublica. And we will be talking about his new book. It's titled Money Well Spent, and that is with a question mark. And it takes a look at the stimulus, which was indeed the biggest economic recovery plan in history, much, much bigger than a lot of other big things that we've done before in this country. So the question is, well, was that money well spent? And he says, well, maybe we would have been better off. We're better off than if we hadn't done it at all, but it certainly didn't bring about the dramatic kind of boost to the economy that a lot of people were hoping for. So that's the second hour today. Tomorrow morning in the 10 o'clock hour, our guest is Peter Coleman. He's an associate professor of psychology at Columbia Teachers College, Columbia University. We'll talk about his book, The 5%, Finding Solutions to Seemingly Impossible Conflicts. And that could be really big conflicts and also could be individual ones. And then one more, let me tell you, tomorrow morning in the second hour, the 11 o'clock hour, our monthly show on computers. And we've been doing this for a long time. To create a basic opportunity for people to ask computer questions. So it can be about hardware, can be about software, anything that has to do with computers. And the guest this time around, and it's something we do every month, this time around, the guest is Peter Kimball, computer-assisted instructor specialist with the Center for Teaching Excellence at University of Illinois. Celeste Quinn is the host for the show. That's tomorrow, and we're here weekday mornings from 10 until noon. You can check the schedule by going to our website, which is WILL.illinois.edu. This is Focus, and our guest is Doyle Moore, the man we'd like to call our chef in residence once a month on the first Wednesday. He is here in the 10 o'clock hour. We talk about cooking. We talk about a lot of different things. This time around, he said, now he's interested in your thoughts about pie, particularly pies that just happen. They just come out of the pantry.
Right.
It's the thing that you say, okay, I'm going to make a pie, and I'm going to go to the pantry, and I'm going to see, now, what do I have here that's ready to go? I can't go in the backyard and pick peaches off the tree. I can't do that. But that doesn't mean you can't make something with what you got.
Well, you know, sometimes it isn't a matter of being confronted with that as a problem. It's a matter of it was never there, so you never even worried about the alternative.
Yeah.
And these were just simple things that you learn from your mother and your grandmother and your grandmother's grandmother, you know, that it's called, well, this is what you do in a pinch. Mm-hmm. Here is about as simple a thing as you can get. This is a butter pie. This is from Indiana. 2/3 of a cup of granulated sugar, 1 1/2 tablespoons of butter, which doesn't seem like an awful lot, 2 level tablespoons of flour, 1 egg, and 1 cup of sweet milk. So you can see how that is. You're going to cream the sugar and the butter and add the flour and mix it up again, which is peculiar to put the flour in with the sugar and the butter. But then you add the egg and beat it up, and then you mix the milk into that. It's an interesting sequence that we don't generally follow because things are kept separate and they're put together. But cream the egg and the sugar and the butter, add the flour and mix it again, add the egg and beat it up again, mix the milk into the mixture and pour into an unbaked pie shell and sprinkle it with nutmeg. A butter pie.
Hmm.
And then here is in this same line, a buttermilk pie. It's 2 tablespoons of flour, 1/4 teaspoon of nutmeg, 2 cups of buttermilk, and 1 tablespoon of butter and 3/4 cup of sugar. So again, you combine the flour and the sugar and the nutmeg and mix it together. Then you beat in the buttermilk, and you beat it until it's smooth. And they don't tell me when to put the egg in. Oh, there is no egg. It was flour and buttermilk and butter and sugar. It's even rarer than I thought. There's no egg in this at all. Flour and sugar and nutmeg, and then beat in the buttermilk, and then you put that into the unbaked pie shell. And that is a buttermilk pie. And I believe I had a buttermilk pie over here. Oh, what is it? South of town and is it Allerton? Yes, Allerton, not Allerton Park,
mm-hmm.
Allerton, south of Philo. I think I had a buttermilk pie there one day. why I was there, I don't know. But
just roaming around,
the buttermilk pie was there, and I had that. And so it's that kind of thing, you know. So look at flour and buttermilk and sugar and butter, and that's all there is to it. That you whip that up and you bake it off, and you got a pie.
So did someone just one day think, okay, this is what I've got. How can I put this together to have it come out and be a pie?
No, I think they said, oh, gosh, this is all I've got. What'll I get if I do it? Well, I'll do this and this and that. Oh, I got a pie. I think it was a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it was a plan. I think it was a surprise.
Okay.
It because, again, the idea of make do. Is such a surprise. I kind of like that. But buttermilk pie is a very good pie. I'm very pleased with that. Well, here's Vinny's vinegar pie. This is from Appalachia. 1 stick of melted margarine. I love these recipes because they ask for oleo, which really puts you way back in time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, 1 stick of margarine. They call it oleo in another one. 2 tablespoons of flour. See, the flour is just enough to kind of give a little thickening to it. 1 1/2 cups of sugar, a tablespoon of vanilla, and 2 tablespoons of vinegar, and 3 whole eggs. Again, just a little bit of fat and a little bit of sugar and then the vinegar, and then 3 eggs. And the 3 eggs are going to end up making kind of like a souffle, it's going to whip up and it's going to puff up. All of these puff up a little bit because of the eggs in them. So you combine the margarine, vanilla, sugar, flour, vinegar, and eggs. That's pretty simple. Take what you got and put it, mix it up and bake it for 45 minutes at 300 degrees. And that's a vinegar pie that is of Appalachian use.
Now, could you make that with butter? I mean, would you, if you wanted to try making that?
Oh yeah, of course you could.
Instead of margarine.
Of course you could.
Okay.
Yeah. These are just take so you have.
Right.
Now I have a more elaborate vinegar pie that uses brown sugar and allspice and mace and cider vinegar and warm water and a stick of butter. So they've added some allspice and some mace as a very spicy thing, to very much the same as this one. But the vinegar pie was popular in the Midwest. Let's see. Lemons were in short supply and expensive, and they were luxuries that many country women could not afford. It was not uncommon for the vinegar that was stored in the barrel in the basements to be substituted for the lemon's tart flavor. The pie is opaque, quivery, and spicy, and the taste of vinegar is not overly pronounced. If you didn't know it contained vinegar, I don't think you'd be able to discern it. Hmm. That's what the author says about this one. And this is an Amish pie using vinegar.
So that's interesting because I would, I think, like you said earlier, the idea of vinegar pie, you think, is that really, it doesn't sound really appealing, but it sounds as if it does, it supplies the acid edge.
What do you do
but
when you ain't got no lemons?
Really, well, and I suppose that, yes, that's the other thing is, yeah, you can wish all day for a lemon, but wishing ain't going to get it for you. So you use what you got. But this makes it sound like, in fact, that the vinegariness, you know, you get the acid edge in there, but you do, at least according to this person, you wouldn't bite into it and think, I'm eating a vinegar pie here.
Right. No, yeah, you don't think that.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember where the last time I saw a vinegar pie, again, I think it was here in Illinois somewhere, south of Philo. It wasn't the same day as the buttermilk pie. It was a different day, but there was a vinegar pie that was available, and some people crave it, you know, and they want that particular pie. It isn't always the tail end of nothing, and so you end up with nothing.
We are here, and we got about 12, 13 minutes left
in
this Party Focus. This is our monthly cooking show with a man we like to call our chef in residence, Doyle Moore. He's been doing it with us for a long time. First Wednesday, 10 o'clock, and we pick some sort of topic and kind of kick it around, looking for recipes and stories and whatever's on your mind. And this time around, he was sitting around in his kitchen. He was thinking, I would like to make a pie. What do I have here to work with?
And on the 1st of February.
On the 1st of February.
Well, no, it was the last of January.
Oh, okay.
It was last week, I guess.
That, you know, you get the idea, folks. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. You can send us an email, and that is will-talk@illinois.edu. Okay, here's someone who has some questions. Wants to know, what is a shoe fly pie? Do you know about that?
Give me a second here. Yes, a shoe fly pie uses molasses instead of sugar. A shoe fly pie. Oh, here we are. Here is I have an Amish vanilla pie, which is one of the many variations of shoe fly pie. They all include brown or white sugar in the base and have a crumb topping. It's also known as Montgomery pie, and it uses white corn syrup at the base and oatmeal in the topping, and it's a very enticing pie. Here is this pie for the crumble, for the inside. Let's see, one egg, a tablespoon of all-purpose flour, a half a cup of dark brown sugar, a half a cup of light corn syrup, but I would use dark corn syrup, a cup of water, a teaspoon of vanilla, and a fourth of a teaspoon of ground mace, which is something we don't use too much of, mace, and an eighth of a teaspoon of salt. That is the grounds of the pie. Then you make this crumble, which is flour, brown sugar, vanilla, cream of tartar, baking soda, some more mace, and a half fourth of a cup of butter. So it's flour and butter which make a crumbly topping, and it has the cream of tartar and baking soda and mace and vanilla in it, as well as a fourth of a stick of butter. And those are whisk the egg until it is frothy, and then whisk in the flour, which is peculiar to put the flour right in on top of the egg. Mm-hmm. Add the brown sugar, corn syrup, water, vanilla, mace, and salt, and mix it well. And then over high heat, bring it to a rolling boil. So you're making kind of a caramel in all this stuff because you're heating it up. Make you bring it to a full boil, remove it from the heat, and let it cool, and it will be slightly thickened because that's got the flour in it but it's that's kind of a weird combination: flour and sugar and vanilla, cream of tartar, baking soda. Oh, that's the top. Flour and sugar and corn syrup, and water and vanilla extract and ground mace. You're going to be caramelizing that while you're heating it up. While the filling is cooling, make the crumb topping and combine the flour, the brown sugar, and the vanilla and the cream of tartar and the baking soda. Using a pastry blender, chop up the cold butter until it's in coarse crumbs, and pour the cooled filling into the pastry shell, and it'll only be half full, but the pie will rise as it bakes, you see, because it has an egg in it. Then sprinkle with the crumb topping, cover the edges of the pastry with foil, and bake for 25 minutes, then remove the foil and bake for additional 20 minutes. So that was in a, what did we do with the pastry shell? Did we bake it? No, it's not pre-baked. It's not pre-baked, so it's going to be a not blind cooked at all. And it says it'll be a little soft, but it'll firm up and then cool it completely. That's the Amish vanilla pie, which is also a variety of shoe fly pie. Okay. But the shoe fly pie was because it had molasses and attracted. It was sweet, so shoe fly.
Uh-huh.
But that's where that comes from.
Okay. There's also this person also observes that her grandmother always used lard.
Lard. Yes.
We've talked about that. Too. There are some people that swear really, you want to have a really good flaky pie crust, you got to use lard.
Well, but there's another reason for that too, is that in those particular days, a lot of preserving was done by lard. My father speaks of frying sausages from fresh pork sausage, making sausages, and then piling them up in a big crock, and then pouring lard over that, and then as long as the lard is at the top, it's not getting any bacteria or air, and so you dig down into that, and you end up with grabbing a greasy sausage with coagulated lard on it, and you throw that in the pan. You've got your instant greasing for the pan,
right.
And so there would always be a supply of lard, and it was often used. Well, oleo hadn't been invented yet.
Yeah, that's like
except by the Italians, and that's really olive oil.
Confit. It's like your confit.
Oh, the confit, the duck confit with duck.
Yeah, but that's right. That's what happens is that, you know, the fat sets up, and then it seals your whatever it is you're trying to preserve.
Yes.
It seals it in. So
yes.
So bad stuff can't get to it, and if you don't have a fridge, well, that's, you know.
We are talking about another time. I mean, the origin of all of these are another time.
Yeah.
But I can't see why I can't do it now at this time.
We have a caller here. You're going to need to put on your muffs.
Oh, well, that would help, wouldn't it?
Yeah. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Here's someone to talk with in Mattoon.
Hi. Speaking of lard, I've got a hot water pie crust recipe.
Oh, my, yes.
Since I was a young bride about 60 years ago, and it's foolproof for anybody that's afraid of pie crust, and it can be pretty touchy. I shed many a tear over mine because it just wasn't good. It wasn't like my mother's. So, and I couldn't handle that recipe that they used back in those days.
Uh-huh.
But I got onto this, and it is, I can actually say that it is, I believe it's foolproof.
Good.
And it's a half a cup of mixed lard and Crisco.
All right.
And I go a little heavy on it. I sort of stack that half a cup measure up.
Yes.
And a fourth of a cup of boiling water.
And boiling water, yes.
Beat this together, and then you chill it. I put it in the freezing compartment.
Oh.
And I let it get about solid.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't take long. And then you take it out and you add a cup and a half of flour and a half a teaspoon of salt and quickly work it together. And you don't have to worry about, you know, overdoing it or anything like that. It's really easy. Just squeeze it up and pat it into a ball and wrap it in wax paper and then put it in the refrigerator.
Oh, and you do put it in the refrigerator. Okay.
Yeah, I do after I've mixed it up.
Yeah.
Because I'm often not going to make the pie right then.
Oh, I see.
I like to have it made up ahead. The only bad part about this recipe is it's rather small. It makes two regular pie shells or one double crust pie.
Uh-huh.
And I don't like to double it. I don't know why. I just don't. It doesn't work.
Well, it's not fair. This is the recipe, and so you just do the recipe, and that's it.
Yeah.
You got to double it, you'll get into trouble.
Well, David should try this. He said he was afraid of pie crust.
Yeah, I am.
So well, I'll tell you, it's a lead pipe cinch.
Well, that's very interesting. I've never spoken to anybody who has made a hot water crust. The hot water pie crust is very, very prevalent in England.
Is that right?
Uh-huh, because it is a little bit firmer than the regular pie crust. For some reason, it's a little firmer, and this is the one. Oh, let's see, what was the show? Downstairs. Maybe it was. But in England, they have wooden, round wooden cylinders.
Like that.
And then you pack the hot water crust around the outside of it and build up a tall crust that'll be about 5 or 6 inches high. And then you take out that wooden plug and you see that crust is strong enough that it'll hold it. I do know that hot water is used in that particular crust.
Yeah, well, this isn't tough. It isn't, I don't know how strong it is, but it's never tough.
It's never tough.
It's just good pie crust.
Well, you know what? As long as you got it and it works, I'd say
right.
Yay, hooray, keep
okay.
going.
Okay, enjoy the show.
Thank
All
you.
Right.
Bye-bye.
Well, thank you. Well, now I got something for you here, and I think that you're going to find this quite interesting. And it comes in here. Someone writes that they made green tomato mincemeat from green tomatoes picked before the first freeze and canned, and they say it makes a lovely pie. And they sent us the recipe. Now, I can real quick tell you about it. This is a recipe for people who are into canning because it's a big procedure. It says, according to the recipe, it takes almost 5 hours and makes 120 servings. Okay, essentially, so what it says is that apples, oranges, lemons, brown sugar, raisins, oodles of spices, and green tomatoes combine to make an incredibly flavorful concoction. Everything is simmered for hours on the stove before they're put into jars and sealed.
Uh-huh.
So what we're looking at here is you want 4 quarts of green tomatoes, minced, 4 quarts of minced cored apples, 3 pounds of brown sugar, 1/2 cup distilled white vinegar, 1 tablespoon of salt, 1 tablespoon of ground cinnamon, 1 tablespoon of ground cloves, 1 tablespoon of ground allspice.
Allspice, yep.
1 pound of raisins and 4 large oranges peeled, sectioned, and cut into bite size, and 1 lemon finely chopped. And basically you put all that together into a big pot and you cook that on low heat for 3 hours. And then you put that into jars, and then you got to do your conventional thing with your, you know, put them in the hot water, and the jars, of course, have to be sterile.
Oh,
and
yes,
you do a whole business. So this is
canning.
This is for people who do canning. But the thing that's, I guess, it's kind of interesting about it is that it includes green tomatoes.
Yeah, I can't imagine a mincemeat with green tomatoes. No, I can't imagine it, but. That would be because there would be just a little another kind of citrus, you know, it's a little sour, and a green tomato has more body than a ripe one. It's not as soft, and so there'd be a little crunch to that. That's quite an elaborate recipe for a mincemeat.
Yeah, and that's also one of those things that, well, you get to this point where if you have green tomatoes and you want to do something with them. You know, what are you going to do? So there you go.
Oh, good. Let's make 20 quarts of mincemeat.
For all of my closest friends as gifts at Christmas time. Well,
I like it.
We're coming. See, that's the cool thing about the show. We get good stories and recipes and people are always doing things that are really interesting and unique. So we're coming down to the point where we got to finish up here. I'm thinking that I might like to try the tangerine chess pie. Now that sounds to me like that would be pretty
well.
Good.
That's since I was attracted to it and it is easy. Be my guest and have my recipe.
Mm-hmm. Any last sort of thing that you'd like to leave with folks?
Well, no, because actually in the long run, this was more philosophical than it was specific. And that was taking care of yourself.
Yeah. And we are nothing if not philosophical
on
this program.
Actually, we are. They've just no one's just figured it out yet. Mm-hmm. But it is very philosophical because it has to come from you, and it is for someone else. And so there's this idea of I mean, unless you're a dumb old bachelor like me, you don't just sit and cook for yourself. You cook for other people, and then you try to. It is your want to make them pleased with what you do. Yeah. So, yes, it is philosophical. Yeah.
My friend, the natural philosopher, Bill Moore, our chef in residence, once a month he's here, first Wednesday. I don't even know anymore. And next time, I cannot believe it. Next time, it's going to be March. So we'll figure out something next time around. And in the meantime, I think if people drop us a line, we could also send out copies of the
–
we
yes.
can make some copies of these recipes.
Oh, yes.
Hey, thank you very much.
You're more than welcome. I enjoyed it. I know there's some people who responded to what it was because we have a wide bunch of folks listening, and I think they are out of curiosity. I enjoyed thinking of it anyway.
I mean, next time we'll get some reports on – on results. Maybe
on
people
results,
can try some
on
of
results.
Things. All
yes.
right. Thank you very much.
You bet.